Hello and welcome to Game of Thrones Off-Season. Tonight we'll be recapping seasons 1 through 7, as well as discussing our predictions for season 8. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, and welcome to our final show.
No!
Yes! The only good news is...
We're closer.
Yes, to the premiere of season 8.
Yay!
April 14th. So I'll be your host this evening, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder. Joining me, Professor Jeremy Dan.
Awesome to be here. To be back.
Yeah.
Welcome back,
yeah.
Jeremy. Mr.
As
Professor.
Well as Anna K. Thomas.
What's up, guys? New to the panel. I'm so excited.
Welcome.
Hi.
And we have Ryan Malady.
Hi, I'm Ryan Malady, guys. I'm so excited for this episode because it's going to be great. We're going to talk about our favorite show, all 7 seasons, and then predictions for season 8.
Exactly.
And I'm really sad it's over, but I'm sad it's just beginning. I'm happy it's just beginning, yeah.
So sad.
Exactly.
I'm all sad.
So sad.
I'm bottling up all these feelings.
You
it's
have
time to,
control,
to let them out.
You have to control all your emotions, man. You need to get more in touch.
I can't. I'm not like a three-eyed raven or anything like that, okay? I can't do these things.
Before we get into our favorite moments of each of the seasons, we have Ryan Malady with news.
There we
go.
All right, guys. So we got some cool news for you today. Real quickly. We're all excited about this season 8.
Of course.
Yep. But we're going to be really sad as soon as it ends. Everyone knows it.
Most deaf.
I'm already heartbroken.
Most deaf. But real quick, we have a little bit of some information about the season. The run times for each episode. Episode 1 through 3 is about an hour long. Episode 4 is going to be 78 minutes. And episodes 5 and 6... are both going to be 80 minutes long.
Ooh, set that DVR for extra time, too.
Yes. Yeah.
The Walking Dead blew that the other night with an episode, and I would just say everyone set that extra half hour in
Very good
Game
advice.
Of Thrones.
Yeah, say and you know, get that After the Thrones stuff. I mean, we all love to see kind of the behind-the-scenes content that they like to deliver after each episode. And speaking of, here's some even bigger news.
Oh!
After the last episode of Season 8, we're all going to be sad, but don't worry, because 1 week later... on Sunday, May 26th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, there's going to be a 2-hour documentary special that basically goes in to the behind-the-scenes world of the making of the final episode.
Wow.
What a dream.
Can we analyze that?
I think so. I think we'll have an after show
for think
that.
We will.
Why not? Let's
Why
do
not?
It. I don't ever want it to end. British filmmaker Jeannie Finlay directs... and quote, says HBO, this is much more than a making of documentary. It's a funny, heartbreaking story told with wit and intimacy about the bittersweet pleasures of what it means to create a world and then to have to say goodbye to it.
Ooh. No spoilers.
No spoilers. Finlay was giving unprecedented access for the feature-length doc, which HBO describes as, quote, an up-close and personal report from the trenches of production, following the crew and the cast as they contend with extreme weather, punishing deadlines, and an ever-exciting fandom hungry for spoilers. That's from Deadline.
Wow.
So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
guys,
so much good stuff.
Let's just keep this
never
ball going.
Forever.
The wheel is not breaking.
Nothing better than a Game of Thrones documentary.
I know, I can't wait. And we also do, Kristen and I, we do this show. We used to. We'll probably do it again soon.
Yeah.
Inside the Documentary for Popcorn Talk here at the same network. Guys, thank you so much for following us this whole time at AfterBuzz TV.
Definitely.
If you haven't, hit subscribe because we got this new season coming. Hit like if you like our stuff because we like you back. And we're on iTunes and YouTube. Love you.
Yep. All right, guys, let's go ahead and get into the summaries of the seasons.
Yes.
And throughout these summaries, we are going to be talking about our favorite moments.
Let's go.
So, season 1, we see a White Walker in the forest.
Yes.
That
yes,
was mythical up until this moment. Ned Stark becomes Hand of Robert Baratheon. And then we also get to Tyrion and Jon investigating the White Walker at the Wall. So, we got some bonding between them.
Mm-hmm.
We get Tyrion arrested because they think that he is responsible for Bran's fall when Jaime actually pushes him out the window for seeing him and his sister.
Seriously.
Well, the dagger.
Going down.
The planted dagger.
I always thought that was just so hasty of,
yes.
of Mama Stark. I mean, come on. Is the little man going to go and kill your kid with a dagger? No, he's too smart and rich for that. He's not going to do that. Anyway.
And then we have Robert, unfortunately, fatally wounded. And then Ned is betrayed by Ryan's favorite character, Lord Baelish.
Best character ever.
On Joffrey's orders, which brings up my favorite moment. And you guys, this isn't my favorite moment, really, because I love Ned. So I didn't want this to happen, but I just felt like this moment was what season one was about, really. So that's why I put this as, you know, my favorite moment. But then, of course, we get Rob being named King of Winterfell, and then we get also the introduction of Khal Drogo, my other favorite in the show. And, of course, unfortunately, he meets his death early, but Daenerys avenges him by hatching three dragon eggs presented by the witches at her for her wedding gift to Khal Drogo. So that's a little bit of a summary of what happened in
Wonderful
season
recap.
One.
That was season one.
Exactly.
I mean, guys, come on. This was season one. We weren't introduced to this show yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know about you guys. Everyone has their own, you know, where were you when Game of Thrones came out story. But for me, I didn't start watching until season three came out. And someone was like, you gotta start watching this show. Mm-hmm. And which was great because I had like a lot of gifts done, right?
Yes, you did. Right?
But season one, I mean, just from the very beginning, the production value, the way they were telling the story, the score, the costume design,
cinematography,
everything was just
so
from the very beginning. It's not like the show, I mean, it does, in my opinion, keep getting better, but from the very first episode, you're like, wow, this is something special. And from the very last episode of the first season, I think that's when we really decided this is not only something special, but something that's instantly iconic. Mm-hmm. When you kill off your main character, and no one ever really does that, I mean, that's...
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I put it as my favorite moment.
No, exactly.
So that's your favorite moment, I guess.
Yeah, and I just agree with you. Like, to have that moment of just conviction in the storytelling and the show and being so true to the books, to have Ned Stark die in that first season is just epic to me. It was just like, okay, I'm strapped in. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
For me, though, I chose a quieter moment in this season.
What's yours?
So I chose when Rob was saying goodbye to Bran, so he was going to sort of avenge his death. What I love here is that we see Bran... Bran sees Rickon hiding, and Rickon goes in and he says, they've all gone away. So at this point, Sansa's in King's Landing, Arya's gone, Catelyn's gone, Ned has obviously passed away, Rob is gone, and they're like, what's happening? Poor little Rickon is like, there's no one left. And he says, Bran says to Rickon, Rob will free Ned and bring Catelyn back, and Rickon says, no, they won't, no one's coming back. I mean, what a little nugget. And that's what I love about the season is that there's so many little gems that you can still go back and find even later. It's great.
And you said it with such pessimism at the time. You're just like, oh, he's just a glass half empty kind of guy. But then it's like, no, he actually does. He can see the future.
Exactly.
And he's right.
But I love that even though Bran, we later learn, is a three-eyed raven, right? We see Rickon sort of have his own visions and his own dreams. There's something in season one where they go down to the tombs, and he also sees Ned before they learn that Ned has passed away. So there's so many little gems in there.
It's a magic little family.
Well, Ryan, you mentioned your on-ramp and what got you into the show. For me, it was season one at the beginning, and I'm not a book reader, but, you know, we all live in L.A., and we have about two-thirds of the entertainment billboards in this country at every bus stop and everything. And it was a pretty big campaign here, and I just said, for some reason, that show looks so damn cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch that from the first episode, and I'm going to watch it hard.
Yeah.
And I did. And then Kristen knows the second part of this story. At my first Comic-Con, I was waiting in line for the Game of Thrones panel. And they had it in a fairly small room. And I was one of the last five or six people denied the panel. And a few days later, I said, I'm never going to be denied anything at Comic-Con again.
I'm going to get on my own Game of Thrones panel.
Oh my God.
2 hours early to the Sci-Fi Network party. Went up in the freight elevator as they were bringing up the food. Was the first party goer there. And then the party officially started. Who was like the fifth person to walk in? George R.R. Martin. George R.R. Martin.
And that's this great. Guy.
I was the first one there. And so I talked with him about half an hour, and he was looking for anyone else to talk to, believe you me.
Oh, my God.
Either hotter or nerdier. Those were probably the sweet spots.
You were right in between.
So favorite moment, memorable moment from season one was the scene at the crossroads where Jon and Ned Stark are saying goodbye. And it's another one of these very, very small scenes. And they're talking about, Jon asks about, does my mother know about me? Does she care I'm alive? Mm-hmm. And Ned says, You know, next time I see you, I'll tell you about my mother. He has this little, I can't replicate it, but this little whimper where, you know, he's holding so much back in that one moment. And that convinced me that, like, literally, this show is about finding out who Jon Snow's mother is. Yeah. And I watched the show like a detective.
No way.
For 7 years.
You thought that?
In the first season, I said, this is the most important line in it was the second episode.
Wow.
And watched it like a hawk for any clue to that. And it paid off.
Amazing.
Yeah, now we know, don't we?
Yeah.
We do know.
We know.
We know.
I would say my favorite moment that stuck out to me was when Viserys got a golden crown from Khal Drogo. I just thought, you know, this right here, before, and that was it, you
and
know.
And that's Dany's brother.
Daenerys' brother, who was basically just out for what was his. But that moment just goes to show that in this world, in this universe that we're being given, there are real consequences to your actions. Just because you have a name or a title or power or influence or whatever it is, you piss the wrong guy off, he'll kill you. And in an epic way with a golden crown. It really spoke, you know, miles to Khal Drogo's character and just that whole culture, the value they see of gold. I mean, it basically just took his sweet belt off, melted it down, and killed a guy with it. I didn't see anyone running after that gold. They didn't care about material possessions.
Exactly.
It was just a stark difference between the East and the West.
See what you did there.
Difference, yeah. But it really opened the world up to, like, wow, this isn't just the political turmoil of the few kings in Westeros. Like, this world is huge, and everyone has a motivation. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to watch them overlap and discover, you know, what's beneath the surface of each character.
Definitely. Moving on to season two.
Season two.
We have Tyrion taking up the post of Hand of the King, hoping to rein in Joffrey after he just beheaded Ned. Mm-hmm. Then we have Robb's armies progressing south, and they actually take Jaime as their prisoner, which is helpful because later on they want to trade him. They hope to trade him for Sansa. And then they send Theon to try to, like, make alliance with his family, but we all see what happens in that storyline. Unfortunately, he does not do that. Mm-hmm. So Bran, at that point, is forced to escape into the forest, which becomes slightly more interesting to me and some other Bran fans, but I don't think everyone loves the Bran story. And then we have Robb also sending Catelyn out to try to convince the brothers Renly and Stannis Baratheon to work together. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Renly refuses, which brings up my favorite moment that I have a picture for. And Melisandre conjures up the shadow baby Renly. So that was definitely a moment that stuck out to me because that, in this show, you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. It's amazing how many storylines get built up. There's so much fluff to them. You get so hyped up, like, wow, like, how is everyone going to handle this particular conflict?
Mm-hmm.
And then they just get killed off. And it's just amazing how there's no shortage of characters or storylines that
you care about.
You care about, and because they keep killing them, all of them. But you still are sitting around wondering and wishing and rooting for characters who've made it through the game.
Exactly.
When they killed off Renly, that was a big one.
In season two, we also meet Brienne, who is actually Renly's bodyguard, but then takes over for Catelyn and protecting her and her children, which I love that little swap.
Love it.
Jaime returned to King's Landing. They're hoping to swap him for Sansa, like I mentioned earlier. And then at the wall, we have Jon Snow uncovering evidence of infant sacrifices. And he decides to join the Wildlings after that because he doesn't want any part of that. And then we have Arya, captured by the Lannisters, unfortunately, and becomes a servant to Tywin.
That was cool.
The irony, man.
Yeah, and she escapes with the aid of Jaqen H'ghar, one of the Faceless Men of Essos, which I love that storyline. Hopefully that's someone's favorite moment. And then Stannis attempts to invade King's Landing, but Tyrion blocks him with his use of wildfire.
And Bronn.
Exactly, and Bronn. And then across the Narrow Sea, Daenerys arrives at Karth. She's hoping to gain support to, you know, take Westeros, but unfortunately ends up imprisoned at the House of Undying along with her dragons. but she eventually escapes and pillages the city.
Love it.
All right. What were your favorite moments?
Oh, man. Okay, for me, so much in season two that I loved, but I loved the very end when we see the White Walkers, and I think we have a picture of it, too, if it can come up, but we have a picture, and we see them for the first time, and we are really just... It brings to life, because I feel like a lot of the end of season one didn't focus on what was beyond the wall. And I really do think that this showed, okay, there really is danger lurking. Everyone's in this political mess, right? And they're dealing with everything, yet the real danger is outside of our walls. And no one's paying attention. You know, there's a few key characters, obviously, that know about it and they're paying attention. But I just feel like everyone is trapped in this political mess.
Right.
And that moment where we see, you know, the Night King look at Sam and with his piercing eyes, and you're just like, oh, this is not a guy to F around with. I just love that.
Yeah, it's amazing how this show is able to... There's a lot of fantasy stories out there that use magic and wonderment to kind of as a crutch to prop up the entertainment value. But I feel like this show, you could totally... Most of the characters in the show don't even believe in the magic that we, the viewer, are privileged enough to see. So it's really cool when they reveal those little things to us.
I think that's why I believed it.
Yeah.
Because it was like a slow burn over time. And that made a lot of sense to me. What do you think?
Well, my scene or collection of scenes, and it's actually another collection of those small moments, but I really enjoyed it because it bode a lot for the further development of Arya. Was Tywin and Arya at Harrenhal.
Yeah.
Just a series of conversations where he's almost figuring out who she is. He kind of calls her on her little lies. He even calls out she's not from the region she said she was, and she was from the north. But she learns a lot from him. And she's starting to develop her born identity, personality. She can't put the masks on yet, but she doesn't have that skill. But she's getting other skills of deception and learning and listening to politics and the battle plans and
strategy,
all that.
Yeah.
It was at that time where you're like, Tywin's the bad guy, but you just have this enamored respect for him. You start to really fall in love with the relationship. And
Tywin could be a business school professor.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, sure he could. You gotta love the journey that Arya goes on with the villains that she considers villains, and we start to fall in love with them, you know? Later in the series, one of my favorite journeys was between her and the Hound. But in this particular season, I think my favorite journey was between Brianna Tarth and Jaime Lannister.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Just to see them off in the woods alone together, you know, she's carting them around like a prisoner. Just the dynamic between the two. One who's a scorned warrior trying to prove herself, and the other who's a warrior who has nothing left to prove, you know, the most privileged man in the world. And he's, you know, now he's dirty and chained up. Just the whole dynamic between them from where they were then and where they are now, I think started fantastically in season two.
And I think that progresses into season three.
Let's go.
Which I would like to talk about. So Tyrion is unfortunately demoted from Hand by Tywin, who blames Tyrion for murdering his mother during childbirth, unfortunately. And then he forces him to marry Sansa, or else be engaged. And then Joffrey, in the meanwhile, is engaged to Margaery Tyrell, who was Renly's widow, in hopes of establishing that Lannister-Tyrell alliance. Mm. And then beyond the wall, Jon Snow encounters Mance Rayder, who tells him that he anticipates the battle to death with the White Walkers. Mm-hmm. And we also get that fantastic relationship with his prisoner, Ygritte.
Yes.
Who later becomes Jon Snow's wife in real life.
Yeah. His captor.
Exactly. Well, yes, he's captured by her. Exactly. In a complex relationship. And one-time prisoner. Exactly. And then Rob decides against marrying Rosalind Frey after falling in love with Talisa. And the Starks are invited to the Frey wedding of Rosalind, which turns out to be a trap, unfortunately.
Spoiler alert.
By Lord Walter Frey and Rob Catelyn. We have a picture for this. And pregnant Talisa and their bannermen are all butchered at the reception with the blessing of the Lannisters.
Wait, I must
have
missed
this episode.
The red
wedding.
It was hard to relive this in going through, like, preparing for this show. It was hard to, like, relive the red wedding. It just got me.
That was one of those things where, I mean, we all remember seeing that moment. It's hard. I mean, of course, I say that was one of my favorite moments. Yeah. Honestly, for me, season three, I think, was one of my favorite seasons.
Beautiful season. I loved Roose Bolton at the Red Wedding, where you get the sense he's sneaky and pretty gnarly, and he kind of holds out. He holds out the sleeve, just and she sees the chainmail.
We know why he's there.
Yeah.
He wants to become Warden of the North, which it was, ends up.
My friend had already seen the episode, and I'm watching, he's watching me. Like, I'm sitting there, like, and I kind of look over, like, what?
Okay.
And he's just watching me intently.
Exactly.
Like, what are you? Don't. I'm trying to watch. He's like, I know, yeah.
But that's the beauty. I love The Red Wedding because people, fans of the book, managed to keep this sacred for fans of the show. Mm. Because most of the people that watched the show that the night it came out had no idea that The Red Wedding was going to happen unless you had read the books. Mm. And I just love how pure the fans, I just love the fans of this show. Like, you guys are awesome because you keep things so pure for watchers and viewers, and I just thought for all of us to be as shocked as we were about The Red Wedding is a true testament to the fandom of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. It was quite wild. I had like PTSD a little, you know what I mean? It was tough for a few days. Season three was amazing. I think my favorite scene ultimately, if I wasn't going to go with Red Wedding, would be when we finally discover the chaos in Littlefinger. When he gives his speech to Varys, I love it. His Chaos is a Ladder speech. It was just so beautiful. I mean, Jon Snow had just climbed the wall. You know, it was just a beautiful cap on the season, and you really got to see, wow, this guy is ambitious. Like, I wonder how far he's going to go. And we go later to find out that he's kind of responsible for a lot of the plot points in the show. But
being, he's the chess master.
Being my favorite character, I had to throw a homage to him. That's my favorite moment for him, was to see behind those eyes.
Okay, for me, I kind of cheated. So I didn't pick a favorite moment for season three. I picked a favorite person, and I have a photo of her. In season three, we meet my girl, Lady Olenna Tyrell. She is a badass. Mm-hmm. I think she is so fierce. I love how she is a strong female character like Cersei, who's very calculating but still has a lot of love and morality to her. Mm. I love her relationship with Margaery. Margaery is one of my favorite characters of herself, and I just think she is so poised and calculated and quick and witty, and I love that she's older and's got a lot of spunk. And so for me, meeting her and having her be a large part of season three was just pure joy for me. I just loved it so much.
Every time she comes on screen, you're like,
I love her. She's like a whippersnapper. Like, she's got a lot of feist to her. Yeah. So I love her.
That's what I had as mine.
Yes,
all the conversations with her, but then I saw another moment that I wanted to talk about, and that's the hot tub party. Jamie and Brienne after their journeys. Mm-hmm. And that scene, you think it's starting with a little banter between these two characters and humiliation as, you know, Jamie comes in naked in front of her and all of that. But it's really when you get to see that Jamie is not just the jerk, the arrogant guy we see in season one, and we really see that other side to him, and you hear the other side of the Kingslayer story and how he definitely does not see himself as a villain in that, and kind of really wonders why everyone of the world does, because he sees himself as the savior of King's Landing, thousands of people, living that out morally, but that ultimately led to his branding as the Kingslayer. We saw an incredible performance by Nicholas Coster-Waldau, and that scene just really stands out for me.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's just a testament to the magic of the show, how you can take the black and white, you know, two sides of the same coin of every storytelling and conflict. You have a good guy and a bad guy. Game of Thrones flips that coin, keeps it spinning, keeps you guessing, who's really bad here? What's the intention behind every character? You see one side of a story, but so often you're given the other side and you're forced to empathize with who you initially considered a villain. And it's not an easy thing to do, but it's the real thing to do, and that's what the rawness of the show brings out. It's like, you can't judge. You really can't. You just have to sit back, watch, and be entertained.
Someone the two seasons before pushes a whatever 8-year-old out a window. Exactly. Now you're actually really liking
and
now
everyone loves the guy. Yeah, it's amazing how they do that.
A few more things that happened in season 3 that I want to just mention is, you know, Arya witnessed the Red Wedding, and then the Hound actually comes and is her protector at that point.
Love that relationship.
And then, of course, Roose is made Warden of the North, Roose Bolton, and Bran Starks discovers that he can project himself into the body of a direwolf.
Yes.
Bran and Jaime continue their journey, and Daenerys gains the army of the Unsullied.
Yes, yes, thank you. I love that part. That was so hype. Like,
Dovahkiin.
It's so real now. I mean, season 3 was just amazing. Yeah. It was so, every single time they cut to someone else's journey, you're just so stoked as to what's going to happen next. Yeah. That was such a cool moment. Daenerys. Like, I didn't see that coming. She, for the first time ever, Daenerys played a hand. Like, she, you're like, wow, she has it in her.
You know what? You also just mentioned the word journey. And in some of the shows that we were recapping, we mentioned that we thought some of the last couple seasons were a little rushed with some of the characters kind of getting to some of the places faster. But between the Arya and Hound journey, the Jaime and Brienne journey, and Daenerys through the deserts. Yeah. We learned a lot. There were great conversations, and it kind of took time. And I think that's why we hold these in our hearts in that way.
It's an excellent point. Yeah, it puts you there. It's like when someone decides they want to go across the entire continent. You know, what's going to happen along the way? Well, probably a lot of just conversation. You know, so and when they would cut to it, and it's just like, that's what they wanted to show us. That's what we got.
It's
and
a it was show about still, walking and talking.
Yeah, the walking dread. No, I don't know. I don't get it.
The stakes are so high in this show, and that's why I love it. Everyone's like, oh, there's so many characters, I can't follow it. But you can, and I think that's what makes it so great, is because you begin to care about so many characters, and then they die. But there are some characters, like in season 4, when we don't mind that they come to an end. So let's talk about season 4. Joffrey,
most hated
man. I have a picture for this, the purple wedding.
Peace, deuces.
He meets his end after being served poison wine at his wedding to Margaery. What's worse than getting killed at your own wedding? I don't know.
Being Joffrey.
Sansa is smuggled to freedom, she thinks, by Littlefinger, who sends her to Lyza Arryn, who he decides is unfit to take care of Sansa, so he shoves through the moon door, also a favorite moment.
It was a good move, just give it a chance.
And then Jaime and Brienne arrive in King's Landing, but Sansa has already escaped, so she is sent to find the princess, Brienne. And then Cersei blames, this is my other favorite moment coming up on the screen, Cersei blames Tyrion for Joffrey's assassination, and so he has his champion, Oberyn Martell, fight for him. He fights against Gregor Clegane, the Mountain, and he almost wins! He almost wins!
Graphic content coming up, guys.
And then Oberyn, unfortunately... Yeah,
that's a good pick right
has
there.
...has too long of a speech that comes
Oberyn
back
too.
To kill him.
Should we describe this for the people listening in
yes,
their cars?
Yes, please. If you haven't seen this...
I don't know how many times you've made this joke,
Gregor Clegane literally smashes in Oberyn's face. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it.
It was mind-blowing.
Say it in your Littlefinger voice.
It was mind-blowing.
Oh, my God. Oberyn, good, you guys.
Literally my favorite character,
though.
Absolutely loved him. So it was unfortunate that we only got, one season of him? Not even a full season, unfortunately.
He had a lot of swag and confidence. And just the faces. And just, yeah, I'm with you,
Kristen. That's what I want, honestly, in a husband, Oberyn, if you're out there.
Yeah.
He was such a passionate, he was a romantic, he was poetic.
Everything.
I mean, he really was. Yeah. He was an excellent character. He just, it's something about someone who has a title but really no power, you know, like he, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he was in between dreams. You know, he was a prince but with no responsibilities, and so it was only later that we find out, wow, he's a warrior. They call him the Viper, right?
Yes,
you know what it is?
Exactly.
And And to see them fight, I mean, you just wanted to root for him so bad. He's like, trial by combat.
His cockiness got him in the end, because it always does with these characters, I'm telling you.
It's amazing how he tells these stories.
He plays into my favorite scene in the season, which is actually the foreplay to this battle, which is the scene in the cell where he and Tyrion, two incredibly opposite people from families that hate each other, but he agrees to be the champion. But that's an amazing scene to watch, and the surprise of Tyrion finally realizing there might be a light at the end of the tunnel. And there's just some great dialogue in there, including Tyrion's line, you know, if you want justice, you've come to the wrong place. But we learn about the My Name is Indigo Montoya quest,
right.
and it gets a lot more serious here, but that was just a really amazing scene that set us up for the next show. And you have this moment of kind of heroism. I remember watching it and just feeling like my back getting straighter, and I can see this turning out well.
You're like, oh, here we go, here we go, here we go. That moment is great for humanizing the characters, because you have Oberyn talking about Tyrion's infancy.
Yes.
You know, so you're sitting there like, wow, these families, they've known each other for a long time. You know, you're not thinking, oh, this is the first time, this moment that they've had. I mean,
I believe Oberyn was pledged to Cersei before Baratheon took power.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I think he may have been.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're right. But yeah, remember when he says, this is not a monster. It's just a baby.
Mm.
And it just humanizes him, humanizes Tyrion, and it makes you, it's the rise before the fall. They always seem to do that. They just find a way to grab the thickest heartstring, yank it, and then kill off your favorite character.
So who doesn't love a good revenge storyline? I mean, I feel like for me, I never really seek revenge on the people who hurt me, so when I get to see people get revenge,
I love it. It feels so good. Speaking of redeeming characters, I love what you both said about how we see the humanizing side of things, and I have a picture of this, but I love when Jaime helps Tyrion escape. So that happens in this season, and what a beautiful moment of Jaime finally stepping by and having Tyrion's back. Like, this is one of the moments where you're like, no, like, after even through everything they've been through, he's his brother, he's got his back, he's going to help him. He believes him, even though Joffrey was his own son, he believes that Tyrion would never do that. And Tyrion then goes on to kill Shay, his girlfriend, mistress, lover, and Tywin, his father.
On the toilet.
So I just thought this scene really, it was a quieter moment, but it was an important moment and really set up the humanizing nature of Jaime to then go on his own path. And Tyrion to go help Dany.
Jaime might have regretted it the next morning.
I don't think so. I don't know.
God, you know, I loved Tywin. I was sad to see him go. It was kind of funny to watch him go on the toilet, because, like, it's the exact opposite of what you'd think. A man of such grandiose, like, stature and importance in the world dies on the John.
It's a good juxtaposition.
Exactly. But I missed him. I do. I miss Tywin. I miss Littlefinger. You know, these characters that, you know, it's good that they're dead, I guess, right? Because it's just, that's how the world plays out.
Exactly.
But I miss him.
But because Oberyn lost, that's why, you know, Tyrion was put back in the jail cell. That's why Jaime then released him. And that's why Tyrion goes across the sea to meet Daenerys, who he believes can defeat Cersei. And that begins their storyline together. And then Roose Bolton returns to Winterfell from the Red Wedding, only to find that his son, Ramsay Bolton, has tortured Theon, and now Theon only recognizes himself and answers to Reek. That all happened in season 4, can you believe it? And Jon returns to the Night's Watch, a warning of Mance Rayder.
And then goes on to become the Lord Commander by the end of the season.
Definitely.
And a huge battle.
Narrowly.
Yeah. And Arya and the Hound are found by Brienne, and she actually defeats the Hound, and that's when Arya runs away while they're fighting, and she begins to study under the mysterious Jaqen H'ghar at the House of Black and White in Braavos. Exactly.
It's so fun, you know. The only thing I think that whole storyline was missing was just a solid Rocky montage. I wanted to see Arya, like, do some push-ups and chase a chicken, you know, in her quest to become the world's greatest assassin.
Yeah.
Guys, where are you? Hello.
Oh, yeah, sure. Da-na-na.
I've moved. Mentally, I've moved on to season 5.
I'm just so excited. I can't wait. I can't wait. Okay. Kristen, lead us into it.
We got a lot going on in season 5.
One
Stannis
of my favorites.
Defeats Mance Rayder and unfortunately burns him at the stake. I hated that scene.
Yeah.
Then Jon is elected leader of the Night's Watch. And, of course, nobody likes that, unfortunately.
Well, half.
Half. Not Ollie, which... later is my favorite moment, unfortunately. But Stannis is convinced by Melisandre to sacrifice his own daughter.
These stupid men.
I couldn't handle that moment. He burns her alive, but you know what? At least his troops, I feel like, at that point, like, they didn't respect him anymore. So it's good to see that some people in this world still had morals and wasn't, like, completely devoted to, you know, Stannis, who obviously fell under the spell of Melisandre. And then we have... Littlefinger leads Sansa to Ramsay with the intent of marrying them.
I love him.
I hate that.
I think out of any villain in this series so far, he's just the worst. Out of Joffrey, he's just the worst. Mm-hmm. The worst. Worse than the Night King, I think, almost.
Awesome.
We got to see him torture way too many
people. Oh, I get so enraged.
They get so mad at me. It's great. I mean, come on. How else was he supposed to get a Stark back in Winterfell? That was, like, the only way.
Ugh, I can't even.
Well, Stannis tries to fight the Boltons, but he's slain by Brienne.
Yay!
But, like, a lot of people were like, wait, we didn't really see him die, so he may. This may be a prediction for J-Dan.
Ooh.
I saw him spice up at that. We'll talk about that later. And then Melisandre escapes... to Castle Black, and Sansa manages to escape Ramsay, thank God. And at King's...
with Theon.
Yeah.
Redeeming himself.
Exactly, a little bit.
A little bit.
And then Landing, Cersei is conspiring against Margaery, who has ended up in the hands of Tommen.
The arms.
In the arms, a good point.
Girl wants that crown. She's going to stop at nothing to get it.
Yes.
I want to be... the queen. The queen.
Exactly. And that's our...
that?
Yeah.
You want to be a queen. I want to be the queen.
I thought you were about to jump in there. Like, yeah, like, I want to be
where the people are.
Oh, my God. So then we meet the High Sparrow, and they eventually make Cersei... you know, pay for her sexual hypocrisy with her brother. She is forced to be naked walking down the streets of the capital.
Shame.
Exactly. Oh, that's a good sound effect.
Nice.
You're like a Foley man.
Yeah, so Dany then takes over the city of Meereen with her Unsullied.
Mm-hmm.
But she struggles, obviously, as the Sons of the Harpy rise up against her. I liked the Sons of the Harpy, like their masks and everything. It was interesting and a nice little villain that we got mixed in there.
It's kind of like Mardi Gras every day there.
Daenerys' dragons eventually whisk her away into the Dothraki.
They whisk her and then they ditch her.
Exactly. And they think that she should stay there as like the women do. Tyrion meets Daenerys, quickly wins her trust, and is left to rule in her absence.
Love it.
And Jon takes a group of the Night's Watch to meet the Wildlings in hope of forming an alliance against the Night King. But the Night King breaks up their meeting. And then people die. And unfortunately, Jon gets back, he's greeted with a bunch of swords. And my favorite moment, which is not my favorite moment, but it was just like the most shocking of the season, was when Ollie, the most hated man in America, decides to get revenge on Jon and kills him.
It's crazy how the show makes you want to see a little boy get murdered. It's just the magic of the show.
Oh,
I didn't think Jon was dead, though. I just had a feeling.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, it's like, it was just, for some reason, he's immune to our shock and awe to how this show breaks
down. Well, kids are pretty much fair game for violence in the show. Remember, the books, I think the main characters are 4 or 5 years younger.
Yeah.
So imagine the Red Wedding being with a 14 or 15 year old.
Mm-hmm. There's plenty.
Selling off Dany when she was like 12. 13. You know, yeah.
There's plenty of little kids who got killed. I mean, the butcher's boy, there was that kid who, what's his name? I totally forgot his name. He killed with Arya's sword Needle.
Mm-hmm.
There was Tommen killed himself. You have Rickon. I mean, kids were yeah. getting slain left and right. It's not every show that can get away with doing that. Yeah. It's just, it was so funny that when Ollie came along, everyone was like, out for blood. I'm like, he's a kid, but like, you know.
Okay, I literally cannot contain myself.
Tell me.
Oh my God. Okay, I love the epic battle scenes in this show. Yeah. Two in particular. I'll talk about the next one when Kristen gets on season 6. Hard Home, I have a picture of it. Uh-huh. This battle, I was so engaged. It was so epic. We finally have this meeting of the White Walkers, the Night King reviving the dead. Mm. We see the Wildlings and the Night's Watch coming together. It just encapsulated cinematography, that television, battle. Sound effects, visual effects, special effects. Like, I just thought it was such... I think this is a different battle. This is Battle of the Bastards. But Hard Home was with the Night King and the Wildlings. But it just really, to me, cinematically... encapsulated what Game of Thrones is all about. Mm-hmm. Quiet moments met with these large scale sort of battles and attacks, and I just thought it was phenomenally shot and done.
Well, Hard Home was my choice as
nice.
Because I knew someone else would take it. By the way, it was amazing. And a town that could have been a wonderful seaside resort was turned into a slaughterhouse. my moment this season, again, smaller, but a badass battle, was Ser Barristan and Grey Worm making a last stand when the Sons of the Harpy went after them. I have a little bit of a soft spot for kind of the 60-something, straight-laced, looking straight at you, straight-dealing, straight-shooting guys like Davos, Jorah, who's a little younger, and Barristan Selmy. But I just think he was so great as the Queen's Guard. And then that scene, you really got to see he was not the defenseless old man. I mean, Cersei dismissed him, essentially, because she said kind of, retirement time, you're going, you know.
Oh, I love that moment.
Join the Gold Girls.
I could cut through the five of you like carving a cake.
Exactly.
You're like, dude, this old guy's bad.
And we got to see it. He took down 10 or 12 in that fight, and I thought it was a great, smaller action scene and loved it from that season.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Speaking of characters kind of like that, where you have this, you know, enamored reverence for, I think my favorite moment would have to be when Brienne executes Stannis. Stannis Baratheon, you know, he'd been fighting for so long to get what he thought was his. You know, he's the younger brother of Robert Baratheon. And he thought he was... I mean, people can make a really good argument as to why he was entitled for the throne. I mean, Ser Davos made great arguments. He got Iron Baker Bravos put up a pretty penny for it. But in the end, I mean, seeing him... lose everything that really mattered. Am I in the right season? Yeah, I'm in the right season. Seeing everything that really, after he executed his own daughter, and then his wife killed herself, and he had nothing left, and he's laying there, he's sitting there, and he just takes his death.
Do your duty.
Do it. Yeah, I just thought that was so powerful. It was such a sad story, but it ended. And there's not a lot of storylines that really come to like a nice...
But did it
and,
end?
Oh, a lot of people say, like, oh, we didn't see him die. Like, we didn't see Lady Olenna die either. But, like, no, he's dead. They're dead. It's just one of those moments where it's like, to tell the story, you don't need to show it sometimes. And I think not showing him get killed was almost the last bit of respect that he was given by the creators, by the story. Mm-hmm. I just thought that moment was so necessary to have just a quiet...
What if we get in them. The documentary behind the scenes that, like, we get to see his death, but, like, he did a bad job dying? So that's why I wasn't in there.
That's
but
so funny.
I like your ideas too, Ryan. Let's move on to season 6.
Yes, another favorite of mine.
So my favorite moment, we have a moment for this, season 6, is Jon Snow rising from the dead.
Looking very sexy, might I add.
Yeah, and we just had to wait year, you know, to see this gorgeous man naked rising from the dead, which we all, like, thought was going to happen, but we needed to see it.
It was about time to have some nudity reciprocity, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, come on.
Even out the game, exactly. And so, basically...
Full frontal or nothing.
There we go. After Jon is risen, he takes back control of the Night's Watch. And then reclaims Winterfell, who Ramsay is currently there, but Ramsay's slain his family, and Jon gets to be reunited with Sansa at the Wall. But unfortunately, you see the killing of Rickon. Like, I just remember him weaving, and then Ramsay
shooting.
He should have.
Well, he should have bobbed and weaved. He should have. But boy. I guess he ran straight, right?
Yeah, he
like, should have ran like
so in my mind. Just, yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I like you know that. Mel about? Gibson. Yeah. What up, Mel?
What up, Mel? How's it going, dude? Good to see you.
But I just like. I just remember, we don't talk about Rickon, no one does, but I just remember his death was so epic and, like, painful to me because Jon was finally reuniting with his family. So
maybe
that
he'll
was...
be back in the next season.
Yeah, everyone comes
did he
back.
Really die?
He's on the other side.
He's like a season of zombies.
He might be.
With Bran, exactly. Just go back in time and then change, you know, catch the arrow.
The Night King had gathered all the bodies.
Oh my God.
Stannis is there too.
What an epic. Scene, by the way, the Battle of the Bastards.
Oh, yeah.
Is that your favorite?
Mm-hmm. That, I'll leave that to you if that's yours.
It is.
No, you guys can talk about it. Yeah,
Let's talk about it.
It was, at the time, the most expensive scene, or series of scenes, the most expensive whatever it was, 18
minutes.
We have
a picture of it, too, which we'll bring up, yeah.
In television history. You know, they spent more money on the Battle of the Bastards than anything. That's saying something. I mean, just for one battle, which we've had, a solid,
almost
strong
one per season.
Dozen, yeah. Mm-hmm, they really do reward the viewers with a promised battle, and this one was just so epic. From the moment that Jon Snow grips his sword, you know, he does that stance, which we've seen him do a few times since then, which is that's okay. But this is kind of the first time we see, oh, okay, he's ready to meet his maker, you know. But just the quality, you felt like you were really in it. It was so raw. It was so cool, man.
Yeah.
It rewarded us for sticking it through all the way to the end. We're just like, you know, it's not like we're not going to. But.
For me, it was the strategy of it. To see, it was the one redeeming quality of Ramsay, I found, was this strategy. A lot of the battles were epic and big and splashy. This one, actually, they took a lot of inspiration from old French battles and old English battles. Having the mound of bodies rise up, then having the army surround Jon Snow and the wildlings, it was just so smart. To the final scene of the guys having the armor down with their swords out and approaching in, getting closer, and fencing in on them and surrounding them. I just thought it was so beautifully, again, like cinematically shot. And whereas in Hardhome in season 5, I love the ending because the Night King revives all of the dead bodies and they all become zombies. Yeah. For this, you see how the dead bodies actually become a weapon against Jon and the wildlings.
So mine also involves that battle, but it's a subtext, and that's the way Sansa works Ramsay and her brother.
Yep.
Sansa wants to make sure that these armies, when she learns that Jon's not going to really wait and try to raise more armies,
and
she's
listen
pretty,
to her advice.
Yeah,
very
she's,
sound advice.
She kind of keeps then her main card, the whole 2,000 mounted knights that are coming, a secret, because she wants to be able to use it in her way. And she needs these armies committed to the field. She doesn't want a siege being laid because it's too easy for Ramsay to outlast a siege.
And
she needed a quick battle that killed everyone and let her get to Ramsay. And she outthought both of them.
A lot of people give Sansa credit. I'd give Littlefinger credit.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
he brought the Knights of the Vale. I mean, he did kind of save the day.
Even Sansa knew that Rickon was a casualty of death. She was like, as sad as she was like, Jon, Rickon's already dead. He's alive right now, but he's already dead. You cannot treat him like this war prize. And Jon, with his big heart, just couldn't do it. And that, you know, really led it to Ramsay's trap. But
so, also, we finally get to see Ramsay fed to his own dogs. So that was pretty satisfying. We also see Cersei blows up the Sept.
Yes!
Tommen commits suicide.
Oh.
Daenerys was a prisoner, but then she convinced the women. They were the widows, from Khal Drogo, all the widows from Dothraki. She persuades them by her power of walking through unharmed those fires. And she returns to Meereen. As their leader, we get Theon. He goes back to meet with his sister Yara, and they take the ships from their uncle Euron. Mm-hmm. They sail to Essos to meet up with Dany.
Mm-hmm.
We get Arya leaving the House of Black and White. This is my other favorite moment. I don't have a picture for it, Jonathan, in the booth.
Because
but Arya,
she was blind anyway.
Yeah, she was blind for a while. But Arya avenges her brother and mother by slitting the throat of Walter Frey. This was such an amazing I remember we, like, didn't know if we were watching flashbacks.
Is this the pie?
Yeah, the meat pie.
And we didn't know if we were watching, like... It happened right at the beginning of the episode. We didn't know if we were watching, like...
A flashback to the Red Wedding, what it was.
We didn't know what it was. It was so cool. And then when she takes off the face and it's her, that was just, like, such an incredible moment for season six.
It is. Beautiful. It made me kind of think that she's kind of... He likes it a little too much. That's what kind of made me, for the first time, kind of scared of Arya as a character. Before, I thought, you know, she was kind of like a superhero, you know, and fighting for justice and stuff.
She had a moment of ecstasy.
She revels in it, and that's scary, you know, and so that adds another complex layer to her, which I think is really cool and important.
Yeah. One more thing that happened in season six is the Night King kills the Three-Eyed Raven, and Bran then becomes a Three-Eyed Raven.
Yes, but Hodor. Anyone hold the door?
Oh my god,
okay, guys, I don't have a picture, but that was my second favorite thing of this whole season.
Yes. Yeah.
What? Hodor. What a punch to the gut to see Hodor pass away in that way, but also save them, and also he was destined to save them, and the whole time that he was saying, Hodor, Hodor, it was for hold the door. I mean, what amazing script writing and writing from J.R.R. Martin.
Performance.
Fantastic.
It really
I get
was.
So hyped, man.
And you know, the implications of that moment.
Bran being able to go back and see
it. Right, to go back in time and stuff. It really kind of has you question what is possible. You know, when you're first watching the show, you were living this universe. Okay, there's dragons. I can accept that. There's the Night King. Oh, zombie kind of. Okay, zombies, I get that. But now we're talking about time travel, you know, destiny, predestined, predetermined, you know, outcomes that can be changed and influences. We're watching Bran, you know, speak to his father in the past, you know, whispering through the wind, you know, and it makes you really wonder what could, if anything, could Bran completely affect the outcome of this whole Game of Thrones, you know?
Let's talk about that in predictions later.
That's what it leads up to is a question of what's possible. Yeah. And I thought that was really powerful.
I just thought it was so touching. I don't normally get, like, emotional in Game of Thrones, and I think with the Hodor moment, I didn't cry, but it almost got me there. It really did.
For the longest time, people were like... it was a thing. You couldn't, like... You couldn't go in and out of buildings without people... You hold the door? Oh, man, come on. Too soon, man. That was really... It was such a powerful
moment. Some bad dad jokes over here, guys.
I'm telling you. I saw a door stop. I looked down at it for just a half second longer.
Like, shed a little tear just in respect.
All right, Chris and
guys,
we have got to get to season we've only got 10 minutes left, Ryan.
My favorite moment for season six is when Cersei blows up the Sept and just completely cuts off all the storylines for the High Sparrow, all the Tyrells, all the court proceedings and everything was just like she cut them all off. It was that. I remember that was one of those moments where Kristen saw me freak out.
I
freaked out when we were watching.
And there's
here
nothing
in the
Cersei loves more than her children, and that act forces her to lose her last child. And what a sad, sad, bittersweet, ending for Cersei.
Sometimes Are you guys ready for a 2-minute recap of season 7?
Yes.
Here we go.
Let's do it.
So Daenerys heads to Dragonstone, and she takes on her massive army of the Unsullied. And the Dothraki with the Frey ships. Melisandre encourages her and Jon to work together. Daenerys and Snow go to meet at Dragonstone, and Yara and the Unsullied are sent to King's Landing, but are defeated, unfortunately, by Euron, because Cersei was like, I'll marry you, Euron, if you defeat them, so he does. And then the Dothraki fight the Lannisters, led by Jaime. And unfortunately, Drogon is injured there in this horrible contraption that they've made to hurt the dragons. Jaime warns Cersei about Dany's power. Jon and Dany decide to call a truce with Cersei, capture a White Walker, and then show her the White Walker.
It was a caper.
But unfortunately, during their trip to capture a White Walker, they fall into the Night King's trap.
Yes,
and
they
lose Viserion, who falls under the Night King's spell, which I do think is just a spell, which I'll talk about in predictions in a few minutes. Jon and Daenerys head to King's Landing to try to talk Cersei into helping. And then they become intimate, and I enjoyed that. And then, my favorite moment,
favorite moment,
season 7 is Arya and Sansa reunite with Bran's help, and they kill Littlefinger, who had it coming.
Now, I'm a little worried about the hand, or the person that gives the verdict does not carry out the sentence, which is a big northern value. That might be some bad karma for those guys.
Absolutely. Well, kind of mistrial of the century, if you ask me, honestly.
Well, okay, he was in charge of who killed Jon Arryn, the murder that instigated the entire Game of Thrones, so I think he had it coming. Sansa has him executed, which was amazing, and Bran also learns of Jon's true heritage.
Yes.
The Night King and the White Walkers breach the wall with the help of Viserion, the Ice Dragon, and winter has come. That was season 7.
Come.
What were your favorite moments?
Favorite moment for me, battle at the Gold Road. To see the dragons truly be unleashed. And see, I mean, we've seen them, but like this, they're getting bigger and bigger every time we see him work. I thought it was really interesting how Daenerys killed off the brother or the father and son.
Yes, Sam.
The Tarleys. Dickon.
That right there.
He's been dying to say that Dickon all night, you guys.
Get your never mind.
We're adults. That was the one. That was the moment that made me kind of lose a little bit of faith in Daenerys being the one to rule them all. And we'll get into that and see Nate predictions, but. The Gold Road battle was so cool to see Jaime and Bronn do their thing, to kind of reunite and do their thing.
Definitely.
I loved it. I just love those big battles and to see dragons blow stuff up. I mean, beat it.
Yeah. Real quick for me, I have a photo. It's a smaller moment. Sansa and Jon, when he gives her, basically crowns her to be the Lady of Winterfell and really finally gives her the praise. We've seen Sansa, for me, I did not like her in the beginning of the series. She was a little brat. Thought, I just did not like her for several reasons. Even as she was being sort of tortured by Joffrey, I empathize, but it was just hard to relate to her. And I just think she stepped into her own. I love that Jon is admitting that he's not perfect and doesn't know everything, and that his sister was the one that saved his butt. And I just thought it was a beautiful moment of the Starks returning home.
Mine is really quick, and you're going to be glad I don't have a picture for it. And it's the stew and poo scene with Samwell Tarly at the Citadel. I just thought, you know, Game of Thrones experimented with a new kind of comedic element. They actually went back to it when they were taking off the grayscale from Ser Jorah, and then we see it cut to the pie, the meat pie. And
all those sounds. That was amazing.
And I just thought it was a new little kind of Dumb and Dumber storytelling element that made watching some of these episodes kind of fun.
Awesome.
Very nice. Very nice. Change
so,
up.
So, getting into season 8 predictions.
Yes.
Yes.
There it is.
We are going to kick off predictions with a game.
Ooh. I love games.
I love games.
Who is more likely to die, Theon or Jaime? Go.
Theon.
Theon and an act of redemption, but probably both.
Yeah, exactly. My answer is both. They're both going down. Who's more likely to end up happily in love, Sam and Gilly or Tormund and Brienne?
Sam and Gilly.
Sam and Gilly, because Tormund is going down.
Oh, wow.
Tormund's going down. Yeah, I mean,
not right now. A little later.
It's coming.
I mean,
hopefully we get a love scene first before they die.
Brienne needs Tormund something, right? Brienne. Like, she's gone kind of dry this whole time. Like, I just think
I think Jaime might have the love connection moment before, with Brienne, before
he dies.
Ultimate sacrifice.
There'll be a love triangle and they have to fight for her.
Who will betray their house? Sansa, Theon, Missandei, or Jaime?
Oh, man.
Personally, I think all of them, but go ahead.
You think all of them are going to betray their house?
I think they will. Mm-mm.
I feel like Sansa has it in her. To betray the trust of anyone, really. Mm-hmm. I think she's learned enough from Littlefinger to decide that, you know, she can make her own moves like a little chess master that she wants to be. So she'll end up doing something that Jon Snow didn't want her to do, I think.
Who do you guys think?
I feel like now that Sansa's reunited with Arya, Bran, and Jon, she won't. So I'm going to say Jaime, because he already is, by leaving and going to the North. He's already doing it.
Okay. I didn't even look at the other choices. I'm going with Missandei. That relationship has been too perfect. Everyone else, Daenerys, with everyone in her party, she's threatened to burn them at one point. Not her. They actually edited a scene out where I think they did something like that with her. I think it's been too perfect. We're going to have some bumps in the road.
Kristen, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I think Sansa might. I don't want her to, but I feel like, and yeah, Jaime already has. Theon, I think that he'll die finally for his family. That'll be like his one last thing. Mm-hmm. And Miss Sandy, I just put her in there because I thought it was fun. But yeah, she might. Because
I don't think so.
She could be from another side. We couldn't see it coming. I can see it. I can see it.
This is one of my big ones, so.
Okay. Who will be on the throne at the end of Game of Thrones? Is it Gendry, Dany, Jon Snow, Cersei, Sansa, the Night King, or Bran?
All right, listen up, you guys. Here it is, okay? Here's the season 8 prediction.
All right.
I think that Jon Snow is going to lead Westeros, and I think Dany's going back to Slaver's Bay to be the leader of Essos. And I think they're going to, once they discover that their love is forbidden and they're related and stuff, I think that Daenerys is going to find that her home all along, where she really developed her power and where she was truly reborn as like this, the breaker of chains. I mean, that's her home. That's where she belongs. I think she'll do better for the world there. And she's out of her element in Westeros, I think, and she's proven that time and time again. She doesn't respect most of the tradition and the culture there. She wants to break the wheel. I think in her place, she'll probably leave Tyrion in King's Landing. And Jon Snow will go back to the North, be King of the North. And but he'll be the ultimate. There will be some kind of council where, like, Varys and
so you're putting Jon on the throne?
I'm putting Jon on the throne in Westeros and Dany sending her back to Essos, and I think that's how it's going to play out.
Okay. Amazing. I also have Jon and Dany sort of co-ruling, I think they stay together in some way, and it's really a story about fire and ice, you know, kind of coming together. Hey. But for my super fans out there, in the last trailer that came out, we see Jon, Sansa, and Arya all see their statues in the tombs in Winterfell, which does not bode well for any of them, because, you know, Ned is down there, Catelyn's down there, Rob's down there, Rickon's now down there, and to see them all go down there and see themselves in stone, I don't think it bodes well.
I would say John, but Gendry is an interesting bet if you're going to Vegas.
It is an interesting bet.
It's too far removed for me.
I know, but
here's the thing.
What makes it
at this point, is like, who is competent enough to be the leader of the world? Gendry, he might have some blood from Baratheon, but like, honestly, who cares who was on the throne before? None of it matters. Everyone has their own personal histories. It's all about competence. Gendry doesn't know how to lead the world. He's just a smith.
You know Gendry?
He's a blacksmith. That's great. He's a cool guy. He's got a nice body. But, like, you know, I don't think he's going to be leader of the world. Leader of the free world. You know what I mean?
Can I show one still real quick?
Yeah, go
so
for it.
My prediction, I just want to show that we have about, I think it's 5 main characters right now who all have Valyrian steel swords. These are the only characters left who have Valyrian steel, which is one of the 3 ways that White Walkers are killed. Of course, Dragonglass is the other, and fire for people that aren't too big, like the Night King couldn't be killed by fire. So I think that one of these people, you know, we got Jaime, Jon, Brienne, Arya. I can't quite see.
Is Samwell?
It's Samwell.
Samwell has one right now.
So I think
these
people who have Valyrian steel are going to be major, major players in the fight against the Night King.
Definitely. Well, who I think will be on the throne is I think Cersei is going to come back and blow up that throne.
I don't think
anyone's going to be on the throne.
She already has it.
I think it's a little bit of what Ryan says. I think everyone's going to rule their separate countries. I think new politics are going to come into play. I don't think anyone's going to sit on the throne anymore.
You know, there was, there was a, remember that flash forward when Bran was having like these like visions? They showed, and I remember from After the Thrones, I can't remember if it was David Benioff or D.B. Weiss who was talking about it, but they basically said these images that we'd showed you during this flash forward are very important,
vital. The House of the Undying?
When did we see the images?
Wait. Okay.
When did we see the images, Ryan?
Hold on.
Finish your point, and then we'll get
my point.
He
had a vision of this like dragon flying over King's Landing, the actual iron the room that the Iron Throne is in was in ruins, and it was snowy. Okay, so we can bank on that. It's probably going to snow wherever the Night King. He's probably going to make it all the way as far south as King's Landing. I'm guessing. You're right. It will be in ruins. I don't think the Iron Throne will anyone will sit on that particular throne. But I think Bran has a huge role to play that no one's really considered.
Well, Kristen loves Bran.
Well, I feel like he's grown distant, though, from the real world since he's seeing everything happen.
Mm-hmm. It's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, because he's seeing it now, like, dispassionately as, like, we see fiction. And I don't know if he's going to interfere because it's like the Three-Eyed Raven didn't really interfere. So it's like, how is he going to come into play? He has to because we've seen him go through this whole, you know, transition. But everyone's like, Bran's going to do nothing. But I think he will. I think he'll come and do something. But my prediction, which I have a picture for, the Ice Dragon pick, they say he fell under the spell of the Night King, which I think the Night King is just under a spell. I do not think that they are dead and can't be come back to life. I think that they're going to be released from this spell, the dragon, Viserion, and the Night King. And I think that is how winter will end. I don't know how that spell is going to be released, but I think it will be. I think it will be. And then I think we'll actually get to really meet him. I don't know. I feel like it's really important that we get to know our enemy well.
Right.
And so I would like to know more about him. I don't want to just see him die and then that be the end. I want to see, like, the spell unravel things and really make everyone see things differently.
That's super interesting.
Do you think that, I mean, you think Bran, I don't know, I'm pretty sure people have said this before, but do you think Bran will, like, warg into the Night King, or do you think that
the Three Eyed Raven... Well, the Night King had touched him already, remember? Yeah, so there's something...
They've got
there's
something
a connection between
there.
The Night King and Bran, because he touched him.
Grabbed
so,
him, yeah.
People, and I know...
Yeah,
I know you have
Jeremy
a ton of
has, like,
and
some pictures.
Some big stuff.
What's your theory,
Jeremy?
Oh,
for big predictions? Well, some small ones. Number one, I think Missandei is the betrayer. Uh-huh. There's a little bit of a clue, I think, if you watch closely the scene where they have the lovely... embrace her and Grey Worm. Mm-hmm. Their romantic moment. I think it gives some clues. Another one is I think and I hope I'm aspiring to this, that one of the characters that who died off screen, Blackfish, Cereal Pharrell, or maybe even Stannis, that's the long shot, comes back and has some role to play. But my big one is near the beginning of the show, I've been hoping that Jon is revealed, you know, his parentage was revealed in a way that is not some magic reveal. And in the final episode of the last season, with Sam and Bran's conversation, where it was so just laid out from Bran's magic vision and from the record of the nullification of the marriage, I still think you need the third leg of that stool. And that's Howland Reed, the only person that lived through the battle at the Tower of Joy. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that he's in there. I'm hoping it's not a random insertion. And I'm thinking we may, and if you, yeah, you could put up number one right now.
His daughter has been a very important point.
His daughter has been in there already. Mm. And we need that payoff because she played a major role. And there's no way that such a loyal bannerman of the Starks would sit this entirely out. So number one is him at the Tower of Joy. But I am wondering if you go to number three, if we might have met him. So this is a picture from the Battle of the Bastards, and this is someone that is cut to a ton of times in the remaining scenes in a bunch of places, especially in the main hall at Winterfell. And if you go forward to number four, as in the battle, he is standing right next to Jon Snow. That's him. And he's in a real place of honor, essentially the person right next to Jon Snow and his mount in the middle of the battle. If you go to scene number five, this is that guy. If you look to the left side, standing there next to the Northern Lords as they're about to give the King in the North chant. And this fellow is dressed in this green tunic or kind of robe. Everyone else is in maybe leather, but mostly armor and furs. They're dressed in their finery. And here we have a guy in almost homespun green clothing like they wear as these guerrilla warriors in the neck at Greywater Watch where they fight in the swamps.
I'm buying it.
And finally, number eight. And there's a bunch of other cutaways. Watch the seed again. Go to number eight to hurry this up. It's hard to see, it's so dark right here, but this character was the person after Lady Mormont, Lord Glover, and Lord Manderly to declare the King in the North, and it started the whole darn chant. So this might be the only person that could do this would be a northern lord. And I think it might be the hidden northern lord. It's only three or four houses that this guy could be because all the others have been identified. This is my long shot. I'm going wow. out on a huge limb.
I was loving that journey.
He might be background actor number one.
Yeah, exactly.
Highest paid. So you get front of the line.
Yeah.
Out of left
scenes.
Field.
Yeah.
I love it.
It is way out of left field.
How
but,
fun,
But
guys.
Jeremy, did we actually land on the moon? It's the real question here.
We
it's
have
all
the pictures
evidence,
to prove
but
it,
we
I
don't
think.
Know. A lot of no, people, cool. a few more things. Like a lot it. Of people are saying Jon Snow won't escape death this time because he owes the Lord of Light. Cersei will be killed by Arya with Jaime's face. That's something that I'm really putting out there.
But,
I love that.
But do you think Cersei's pregnant? I mean, that's a huge
I
cliffhanger.
I don't think oh, Cersei's right. pregnant. Do you guys think she's pregnant?
I think she might be pregnant, but the
with the shadow baby, maybe.
The prophecy says she would only have those three kids.
Yeah.
Maybe it's
which
a
means
kid.
That she could be pregnant, but she never actually has the kid.
Yeah.
Some
she'll
of the
be
people
killed before she gives birth.
That have watched some of the reel and the previews have said she's drinking wine again in one of them.
But Cersei always drinks her wine. She's not a responsible mother. I do think, though, her one motivation always has been her children. So to have a baby in her belly, in her mind, in Cersei's like crazy kind of effed up world, that would give her motivation to cause even more havoc so that she can regain power for her child.
Unless she's lying just to keep, you know... If you say you're pregnant, people kind of, you know...
Well, I think Cersei has proven to be the true, real supervillain, and I think she's going to prove that when she doesn't align with everyone else against the Night King.
She really has nothing left to lose unless she's
nothing
pregnant,
to lose, exactly.
In which case she does.
And Jaime, that's it.
And the one thing I'm super excited for, Clegane Bowl.
Yes, the Mountain versus the Hound.
The Mountain
Who will
versus
win?
The Hound. I would love
it's
to
gotta
see
be
that.
The Hound.
It's gotta
right?
be the Hound, Kristen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it could be like Oberyn and where like they both sort of die, but then Qyburn brings them both back and they're both like half dead pigs.
Just like some like mountain Franken mountain range.
Everyone's dead at the end of Game of Thrones
except
for
the Mountain
two.
Hound. Yeah.
They've got like animal parts.
Yeah.
Well guys, it's been so fun recapping seasons 1 through 7.
Yes.
And we are thrilled to announce the premiere April 14th. We hope that you will join us here to review every episode, which is going to be basically an hour and a half. Basically a film is every episode.
Yeah, we'll be here. We're going to watch the East Coast feed live, and then we're going to be filming the after show right here live. So come watch it live. If you you watch the show and you want some more Game of Thrones talk, come on over to AfterBuzz TV, youtube.com/AfterBuzz TV. We'll be here.
Can we have a studio audience of three or something?
We got everybody out there.
Stuff.
Yes.
Right.
Well, thank you guys
you.
Again for joining us. We'll see you April 14th. You can follow me, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, at Cinematic Escape.
Cinematic Escape.
We got Professor J. Dan at USC.
Professor,
yes,
thank you for joining us.
Love joining you guys for the first time tonight. You guys can find me on all social media at Anna K, K-A-Y, Thomas, on everything.
And I'm Ryan Milotti. You can find me everywhere at Ryan Milotti. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys.
Bye,
see you
guys.
April 14th. Woohoo!
We
did
Magunas.
It!
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.